Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, I wrapped up our multi-episode exploration of the way of the BU journey, aka personal growth, self-actualization, self-empowerment, becoming a you are you, becoming un-F-withable, whatever you want to call the process of enabling the person you were born to be. It's a journey of increasing self-awareness and self-love, of decreasing self-sabotage and inhibitions that keep you small and stuck. In this episode, I'm sharing stories about the importance of journeying deep, right down to the crux of a matter, to enable change you want to see, change you want to be. As Shakti Gawain said, the process of change does not occur on superficial levels through mere positive thinking. It involves exploring, discovering, and changing our deepest, most basic attitudes toward life. So what does it mean to go deep? How does it happen? Let's begin with a story that isn't mine, but which strongly impacted me, probably about 2 decades ago. I first heard it in a leadership training course when I worked in municipal government, and chances are you've heard it too. It's been quite popular as a striking example of the power of asking why to go deeper and deeper towards a solution to a problem or challenge to bring about change. It's the story, fact or fabricated or embellished, it doesn't matter, of a monument in Washington, D.C. that was crumbling and needed to be saved before it was too late. I especially like the way Joel A. Gross tells the story in his August 10th, 2014 article called Five Whys Folklore: The Truth Behind a Monumental Mystery. He presents the story by asking five whys, which I'm sharing here. The story's problem is one of the monuments in Washington, D.C. is deteriorating. The first why is, why is the monument deteriorating? Because harsh chemicals are frequently used to clean the monument. Why number two? Why are harsh chemicals needed? Because they're required to clean off the large number of bird droppings on the monument. Why number three? Why are there a large number of bird droppings on the monument? Because the large population of spiders in and around the monument are a food source to the local birds. Why number four? Why is there a large population of spiders in and around the monument? Because vast swarms of insects on which the spiders feed are drawn to the monument at dusk. Why number five? Why are swarms of insects drawn to the monument at dusk? Because the lighting of the monument in the evening attracts the local insects. The story's solution? Change how the monument is illuminated in the evening to prevent attraction of swarming insects. It behooves us adults to become three-year-olds again and incessantly ask, why? 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 Until we feel we've reached ground zero. My second story, which may also be described as a rant, is structured on the five whys and concerns our global environmental crisis, a matter about which I feel very passionate. The story's problem. The Earth's natural environment, crucial to humanity's existence, is being destroyed. Why number one? Why is the Earth's natural environment, air, land, and water, crucial to humanity's existence, being destroyed? Because many humans are engaging in unsustainable, degrading, and polluting practices in the sourcing, production, transportation, marketing, purchasing, and disposing of material, stuff, and energy. Why number two? Why are many humans engaging in unsustainable practices? Because over the course of human evolution, particularly in the last 10,000 years, the human population has been increasing exponentially, and over the same time period, humans have been getting increasingly prolific at developing stuff that improves convenience and/or appeals to humans' senses. Satisfying the demand for more and more material stuff by more and more humans is more than the Earth can sustain. Why number three? Why are humans demanding more and more material stuff? Because over time, especially since the Industrial Revolution, humans have become habituated to possessing material stuff that makes life ever more convenient and ever more sensorially pleasing. In the process, possession of material stuff has become a common marker of success and wealth and comfort and equated with happiness. Without it, humans feel wanting, impoverished, unsuccessful, unhappy. Why number four? Why do humans feel wanting, impoverished, unsuccessful, and unhappy without material stuff? Because human society has evolved into a capitalist, consumerist society where sourcing, production, transportation, marketing, purchasing, and disposing of material stuff and energy for profit is now central to human existence for most of the world. It has become humanity's all. It inundates daily life for humans, such that a large portion of humanity now attempts to create fullness of life, enrichment, success, and happiness through possession of material stuff. Why number five? Why does the vast majority of humanity now attempt to create fullness of life, enrichment, success, and happiness through possession of material stuff? Because of humanity's evolutionary path, the human mindset, having it all is what makes life rewarding, has replaced the mindset, being our all is what makes life rewarding. For the vast majority of its existence, humanity had been a species of very minimal material possessions, sustainably coexisting with all the other plant and animal species. It's only been the last 0.00015% of humans' evolutionary timeline since the Industrial Revolution in the mid-1700s that humans have become unsustainably capitalistic. Solution? Restore the human mindset from having to being. So humans no longer strive to possess material stuff in an attempt to create fullness of life, enrichment, success, and happiness. This change would bring about the end of unsustainable capitalism that is destroying the Earth's natural environment, which is crucial to human existence. Obviously, this is a simplified story, or gratuitous rant, but nonetheless, another example of the power of asking why in order to enable change that works for the long term. Before I share my third story, a personal story about going deep by asking why, here's what I think is a societal example of how change doesn't happen when the whys aren't asked. It regards addiction. AddictionHelp.com reports that an estimated 21% of Canadians, about 6 million people, will meet the criteria for addiction in their lifetime. The same source says, as of 2020, over 37 million people in the United States, 12 and older, actively used illicit substances. 13.5% of Americans, 12 and older, have used drugs in the past 30 days. In days gone by, the approach to dealing with this societal crisis was to declare a war on drugs with very little positive effect. Perhaps somewhat less stigmatizing, addiction began to be perceived as a chronic disease. But still, the whys behind the disturbing, expanding societal phenomenon were lacking. These days, I'm hearing addiction more effectively and appropriately described as a symptom, correctly implying that addiction is a manifestation of an underlying cause, such as a fever has an underlying cause. This perspective prompts the question, why? Why is addiction manifesting? Why are people with addictions craving their object of addiction, a substance, sex, gambling, for examples, despite losing control over it and knowing continuing involvement with it produces adverse consequences? Why? Deeper whys are pointing to the sources of pain that objects of addiction may initially soothe, such as pain from a sense of lacking purpose or meaning, being disconnected, not belonging, lost identity, trauma, mental illness, family history. Instead of treating only the symptom, the whys enable getting to the root cause of addiction to treat it there, such as you'd want to treat not just a fever, but its underlying cause, perhaps an autoimmune disease or infection. So now on to my personal story of asking why, to help bring about a change I wanted to see in me, in my life. Here's a preamble. As a kid, I really liked the movie Journey to the Center of the Earth, which originally came out in 1959 when I was just 4 years old. It was based on the science fiction novel by Jules Verne, written almost 100 years before the movie. I remember being so scared, but also intrigued with the thought of an exploratory expedition down to the Earth's core. I watched it again several years later, the technological effects seeming so tacky, and what was frightening to the kid me was now hugely entertaining. A sequel came out, I think, around 2008 or 2009, but I never saw it. Anyway, I begin my story with this because for me, it's a great metaphor for courageously going within oneself to discover what's at your core. If you've seen the original, you'll recall the villains and monsters the characters had to face as they journeyed down, down, down. It can be hugely challenging and scary, making our way through all the layers of debilitating and false self-beliefs to get to our truth and empowerment. But in the end, I remember the explorers climb into a big sacrificial altar bowl in a lava pit and are carried upwards to the surface of the earth through a volcanic shaft as the volcano's erupting. It's like the lava represented the power of the truth setting the explorers free. The story I'm telling now uses the structure of the five whys. It's one I've told before in full detail in an earlier episode. I'm only relating a bit of it here, and it begins with a version of me, aka Annie Gigg, from a number of years back. The story's problem is, Annie Gigg is feeling inauthentic, disconnected, guilty, shameful, and stuck in life. The first why is, why is Annie Gigg feeling inauthentic, disconnected, guilty, shameful, and stuck in life? Because she's the holder of a very big secret. By virtue of being a secret holder, she's not presenting her whole real self to the world. Why number two? Why is she holding on to the very big secret and not presenting her real self to the world? Because she has the huge fear that if her secret's told, people would become aware of the kind of person she really was and judge her. The information she was holding could have very serious consequences in her relationships with loved ones, in her life as a whole. Why number three? Why does she have the huge fear that if her secret's told, people would become aware of the kind of person she really was and judge her? Because she's projecting the perception she holds of herself, her self-dislike and self-disgust, into the minds of others, so she expects others to dislike her real self and find her disgusting. Why number four? Why is she projecting the opinion she holds of herself, her self-dislike and self-disgust, into the minds of others? Because the character traits and behaviors she perceives in herself are too difficult to acknowledge and confront, so it's easier to transfer them to someone else and attempt to protect her already almost non-existent self-esteem. Why number five? Why are the character traits and behaviors she perceives in herself too difficult to acknowledge and confront? Because she doesn't have the awareness of how strongly and in what ways all the influences in her life, her family, faith, friends, culture, society, environment, prior decisions and choices, have shaped her beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors. And without that awareness, needed to bring about change, she remains inauthentic, disconnected, shackled to guilt and shame, and stuck in life. The story's solution? Annie begins the self-awareness work to enlighten and empower herself to develop self-acceptance and self-love, shadow side and all, to enable authenticity and a sense of intimate connection with herself and others, to understand that the earlier versions of herself were doing the best they could with all that was available to them at the time and therefore cannot be held to blame, to unshackle herself from the incapacitating weight of her guilt and shame-ridden secret. Of course, the story's solution didn't manifest overnight. The solution is the outcome, the ever-evolving outcome of continuously developing self-awareness. And I'm certain this self-awareness could never have happened if I'd tried to develop it on my own. I've described previously how for decades I've devoured self-help books. I sought out personal development speakers, attended seminars, participated in personal and group therapy, took life coach training, and talked about self-awareness and presented on the topic and wrote about it because that's what solidifies learning. And all of this deliberate learning is only homework assigned in addition to the lessons given in the school of life, where the essential learning happens. But that essential learning happens if and only if we ask why. Why did that just happen? Why do I believe that? Why do I think or feel that? Why do I act or behave in such and such a way? Why do I keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome? Why is that my goal? Why isn't life unfolding as I dreamed of? Why enables our self-empowerment? But as an aside here, I'm going to expand on that. There's another extremely powerful three-letter word that I've spoken about previously, yet. Sometimes, depending on how it's posed, why on its own can sound self-judgmental. For example, why do I keep screwing up? But when you append yet to the because in response to your why, it reinforces in your mind that you're a work in progress and you're moving toward your desired outcome. Why do I keep screwing up? Because I haven't yet developed the consistent mindfulness I need to regularly apply the new, healthier behavior I'm working towards. Now, back to why. The final story I'm sharing in this episode highlights another important function of why to move you deeper. Decades ago, I captured in my scrapbook a thought that had popped into my head, although at the time, like many things I wrote down over the years, even though they sounded good, I didn't fully understand what they meant. What I wrote was, as far as you must reach upward to touch the evening star, so must you reach inward to know who you really are. Little did I know how far that far is. It's far. And you ain't ever going to touch either the evening star or fully and completely the person you really are. But as I've repeated several times, the fact that the ultimate perfect destination is actually unreachable doesn't matter, because your happiness, your fulfillment, your rewards in life manifest along the way of your self-actualization journey with increasing frequency and intensity. I'm now talking about asking why in order to drill down to your values, i.e. what you judge as most important in life that exists at the center of your earth, your core values. You may have heard from a previous episode that your core values, the values you hold close to your heart that are non-negotiable, so to speak, are directional arrows pointing you towards your life meaning and purpose. When you live in alignment with your core values, you are fully, meaningfully, and purposefully alive. There are certain core values that are held by most, if not all, people. I'm thinking of love, belonging, good health and happiness. So if I were to ask you, what are your core values? I'm probing for something beyond those fundamentals. Do a Google search for core value list, and in alphabetical order, you'll come up with something like accountability, achievement, adaptability, adventure, altruism, ambition, authenticity, balance, beauty, and so on. Your challenge is to drill down to a handful of core values, say four or five that resonate most intensely with you. In the episode on core values as directional arrows pointing to meaning and purpose, I share some exercises that may assist in that drilling down. I also mention how important it is that we differentiate between our own values and values we may have inherited from others. I said when you live in alignment with your core values, you are living fully. But when you're out of alignment, like driving a car with misaligned wheels, that journey is bumpy and not as pleasant as it would otherwise be. I know this firsthand. For many years, I intentionally, misguidedly ignored a core value of mine and spent about 20 years in a career that was not well aligned with who I am. I entered the workforce after university in the 1970s when Helen Reddy was singing, "I am woman, hear me roar." And the societal message was, women, you can do it all. You can have a career and be a mother. You no longer have to be a nurse or a teacher or a secretary until you become pregnant and then become a full-time housewife. That was woman's liberation, and I heeded the seductive call. I steered away from those unliberated women's jobs and fell into municipal government. I was soon clasped in the golden handcuffs, a great salary, great benefits and retirement package, great working environment. My husband and I followed the lifestyle trajectory that demanded two incomes, buying a house near the city, buying two cars for commuting, and raising a family. I wasn't miserable in my career work, but neither was I impassioned, not until I began my third decade of work. But let's back up. If women's lib wasn't such a strong force at the time I was entering the workforce, roaring, you can be other than a teacher, like my oldest sister, or a nurse, like my second oldest sister, or a secretary, I'm quite certain I would have gone into the teaching profession, and I'm quite certain I would have been a very good teacher because I'm passionate and have always been passionate about sharing information with others to inform and enlighten and promote personal growth. That is one of my core values. To the agony of my two kid brothers, whom I somehow roped into being students in the summer schools I taught when I was about 8 to 10 years old. As I said a moment ago, I was not impassioned in my municipal government career for the first two decades. But when I was promoted to management, all that changed. I was now in a position where I was responsible for sharing information with others to inform and enlighten and promote not only personal growth, but the growth and high functioning of the team of employees that reported to me. Finally, I was in my element, and my passion translated into great feedback and reviews and regular salary raises. You are in flow, or in the zone, or fully alive. You're living with meaning and purpose when you're doing something you love, something you're good at, and something of benefit. Hence, the absolute necessity of knowing your core values and seeing where they're pointing you. To wrap up this episode, we'll consider a story about asking why to help you go deep to your core to discover the values, the directional arrows that reside there. Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Annie Jig. As a youngster, she really enjoyed putting on plays for her family. She loved teaching her little brothers how to read and write. In elementary school, Annie eagerly participated in the public speaking competitions in front of the whole school. She recalls an afternoon once when skating on a pond behind her house, she got so caught up in the imaginary ice dance routines for the imaginary Olympic crowd watching her that she didn't notice that it had suddenly become dusk. When the little girl grew up and went to university, she likewise lost track of time when, in her cartography lab, she meticulously hand-drew maps. This was before desktop computers. Enjoying the challenge of creating a work that was both aesthetically pleasing and highly effective. Later on during her career, Annie took pleasure in writing and presenting reports for city council and senior management, striving to ensure they were articulate and comprehensive. As Annie journeyed along her self-awareness path, she began to ask herself, why? Why all along have I so enjoyed these seemingly disparate things? Why do they make me feel good? Annie suspected this why was necessary for her to notice what all these things actually had in common, and this is what she noticed. They all made her feel energized, rewarded, connected, immersed, satisfied. And why did they make her feel this way? Because in an aha moment, Annie realized they all have an element of creativity, usually but not always in the form of writing, speaking, or drawing, and in all cases, she's offering something to someone, often to educate. Bingo! Annie discovered her core values of creativity, teaching, and offering service. Much later in her life, when Annie stumbled across something called the love languages, she immediately recognized hers to be acts of service. In her retirement, she'd stay closely aligned with her core values, doing something she loves, something she's good at, and something of benefit, in order to live increasingly happier ever after. The end. Which is not an end. There is never an end to asking why. In the next few episodes, there is going to be a lot of asking why. The episodes are presented in the form of a conversation largely between my 25-year-old self and myself 35 years later at the age of 60. I say largely because the final episodes of the conversation involve me at the age I am as I'm recording the episodes, 68. I'm guessing you may have considered the question, if you could go back in time with the knowledge and life experiences you've garnered up to the present day, what wisdom would you share with your younger self? The conversation between Annie younger, age 25, and Annie older, age 60, is an elaboration of this concept. However, obviously, Annie younger will not recall any of the conversation and will evolve just as I have. I love who I am today, perfectly imperfect. I love my life with its ups and downs. I wouldn't be the person I am if I hadn't experienced the failures, challenges, bad choices, unhealthy relationships, successes, good choices, empowering relationships that I did. And I wouldn't be the person I am today if I hadn't started asking a lot of whys. May I challenge you the next time you ask, why me? Instead of asking it from a victim mentality, ask it from the mentality of a person keen on self-awareness and self-development. Why me? Why did the universe provide me with this situation, this learning opportunity? Why is the universe trying to tell me something here? Why is the universe wanting me to become more self-aware? What is your why? When the why is clear, the how is easy. I invite you to eavesdrop on the opening conversation between Annie younger and Annie older by tuning in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.